This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzer. Bill Raggio, my colleague and co-host, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, Long War Journal. And we're joined by David Dayoud of the FDD, who files routinely on Long War Journal, watching Hamas, Gaza, watching Lebanon, watching Syria, watching Yemen. The vast war is still underway at various stages, but we go to Gaza. Headline from Israel these last hours. Israel says resuming Gaza ceasefire after deadly attack on troops led to massive strikes. Subhead, Washington said leaning on Jerusalem to keep truce going prevented it from halting. And then we have an update. Netanyahu telling the Knesset, Hamas was never prepared before to accept current deal to return all hostages, keep IDF in most of Gaza. So what we have here is hedging from what we understood to be a ceasefire. There was common mention of the word peace. This is at the gathering of the world leadership, or most of it, at Sharm el-Sheikh last week. David, I begin with you because this is a moving story. Ceasefire and then an eruption and then ceasefire's back on. Can you help us understand why the interruption in the ceasefire, who's shooting where and what bombing? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. So look, I mean, ceasefires generally aren't a linear or clean process. You always have, especially at the outset of a ceasefire, punctuations of violence, violations of the ceasefire tends to be from both sides, right? Both sides are trying to entrench their positions, put themselves in a position that is perhaps most advantageous to them in case fighting resumes. So what we're seeing, I guess, is in part a settling of the ceasefire. But, you know, there was an attack on Israeli soldiers. I believe it was in Rafah that killed two Israeli soldiers. And in response, we saw this escalation from the Israelis where they retaliated. And, you know, again, this is a natural part of the settling of a ceasefire, where if one side commits a violation, you have to show as the other side that you're not going to accept it. You're not going to accept a sort of status quo that advantages the other side in the situation of a ceasefire. So the Israelis are redrawing their red lines, saying, you know, you kill two of ours, we're gonna kill out, we're gonna target you, we're gonna hit you hard in response. At the same time, I think I said this last week, I don't see Israel using this as a pretext to throw the ceasefire out of the window entirely. There are domestic pressures for this, domestic causes for this. I think the Israeli public has already gone into a post-war mentality, and taking them back into the war is going to be very difficult, especially, you know, this has been a dynamic that has existed throughout the war, especially with this government's lack of trust among the average Israeli. But more importantly, there is the dynamic that exists between Jerusalem and Washington, and that President Trump has made it very clear that this is the end of the war. Right? He's put his word out there. He sent Steve Witkoff, Jared Kushner, Ivanka to speak at Hostage Square. He himself was in the Knesset. He is putting his reputation on the line to say this war is done. And as much as, you know, during the speech in the Knesset, he called Bibi, Prime Minister Netanyahu, someone who's tough to deal with. I don't think he will be so tough as to insult President Trump in such a way as to restart the war, when, again, President Trump has put his entire reputation behind this war being over. That would probably create a rupture in their relations. And there's only so far that Prime Minister Netanyahu can, or any world leader can, push President Trump. The man's word is final, for better or for worse. So, again, I think we can see the Israelis reinforcing red lines. We'll probably see, you know, more isolated incidents like this with the Israelis reinforcing red lines, and both sides returning back to saying we're still maintaining the truce. This was an isolated exception.
Bill, you have a question for David.
Hello, David. Is there any indication that the return of the bodies of the dead hostages that Hamas is still holding, I believe it's around 20 bodies, will be delayed after this violation of the ceasefire?
It doesn't seem so. It seems like Hamas, I don't think it ties to this. Hamas has claimed that the IDF's activities are hampering their ability to find hostage bodies. I mean, I think this is a par for the course for Hamas. This is in some ways, I would say, their last hurrah against the Israeli public. Their ability, kind of their last chance right now in this, at least this round of fighting, and I'm sure there will be future rounds of fighting, to mess with the Israeli national psyche, to hurt especially the families of the dead hostages who are awaiting their loved ones' bodies. But it's also, I think, Hamas's way of guaranteeing that it still has a card to play until the ceasefire settles enough. So we've been seeing them, rather than what the deal stipulated, is to return all the hostages, living hostages all at once, dead hostage bodies, or rather the hostages' bodies all at once. They're doling them out piecemeal, I think, in order to prevent Israel, or preclude, prevent any possibility of Israel resuming the war, right? They'll probably space this out over the course of what'll probably be end up being a month at least. And in that time, right, that gives the idea of a ceasefire time to settle, both in the Israeli national psyche and perception, in the international psyche and perception, making it more difficult for Israel to resume fighting. And I think this is definitely part of Hamas's calculus, a very cynical calculus that is using dead bodies, bodies of innocents that they took from their homes in many cases, to ensure that it has the breathing room to survive, to make sure that this war doesn't restart.
Hamas has the same anxiety after a conflict like this. David, do we have any knowledge, any reason to believe we're going to get trustworthy numbers about the number of Hamas fighters, KIA, wounded in action, missing in action, as compared to that gross number that the so-called health ministry gave us for 2 years?
I don't think so. I think this is going to be, the number is going to be something that is probably be perpetually shrouded in ambiguity and the fog of war. Hamas has its numbers, at least the Gaza Health Ministry, which is effectively Hamas, has its numbers, but they're not distinguishing between fighters and civilians. That includes both minors and who are sometimes inducted into Hamas's fighting ranks and people who are of the age of majority. And Hamas has an interest, obviously, in minimizing its own casualty numbers. Right now, it wants to project strength within Gaza. We see this with all the kind of intra-Gazan violence that has come after the ceasefire. Hamas is basically telling it has been weakened. It's obviously been weakened, but what it's telling potential rivals in Gaza is, no, we are still top dog here. Don't think to challenge us just because we've taken a beating and now that the war is over. From the Israeli side, the Israelis have been challenging Hamas's numbers, or at least the credibility of Hamas's division of the numbers into combatants and non-combatants since the outset of the war. But what the Israelis have failed to do is give their own numbers that have any degree of accuracy. We've heard the 20,000 number of Hamas fighters that have been killed. I think it was January of this year that number was put out. And then Prime Minister Netanyahu was asked on CBS News, I think it was in the past week, okay, you don't like Hamas's numbers, you don't like the division, what are Israel's numbers? And he still said the 20,000 number for Hamas fighters killed. So I find it implausible that the Israelis in 10 months have not killed a single additional Hamas fighter. And yet the Israelis aren't updating their numbers. And, this is part and parcel, I think, of Israel's poor PR during this war. Obviously on display, Israel's loss of the narrative war and still a lack of an effort to kind of rectify that mistake and give updated numbers. The IDF can say, and Israel can say, look, we verified this number of casualties. Here are the combatants, here are the non-combatants. Here's how many Hamas we killed. So the Israelis, I don't think we can depend on the Israelis to come out with an accurate number either. And we certainly can't rely on whatever Hamas produces for all the reasons that I mentioned.
Bill, does CENTCOM have a comment? And do you have a question for David?
No, I haven't heard anything from CENTCOM concerning the ceasefire. You have to remember, with the government shutdown, there's not a lot of work being done in putting out press releases and things of that nature. I was looking at one of the social media accounts, and they actually put an update that said, due to the shutdown, we won't be maintaining their posts at X. So it's been, I haven't seen anything official. David, a question for you related to Gaza. After the ceasefire, Hamas immediately came out and began targeting its rivals. What is currently going on? Are we seeing any effective opposition to Hamas?
No, I don't think this is a matter of effective opposition. And you have, you know, pro-Palestine propaganda mouthpieces like Mondo Weiss and others, the entire pro-Palestine movement, justifying this to some degree. What Hamas is doing is like Hamas is going after collaborators with the IDF and so on and so forth. It's not the case in every instance. What Hamas is trying to do here is, again, reassert dominance. Now, before the dust even settles, they want to make sure that as the IDF withdraws, according to the timetable set in the ceasefire, as that, you know, what they say, power abhors a vacuum, they're trying to make sure that no one else fills that vacuum. They want to make sure that as this war recedes into memory, that they remain the dominant power in Gaza. They've made it very clear they're not disarming. They've made it very clear that, they're not giving up governance, everything. You know, this is all after the ceasefire. And this is their way of asserting their claim to remaining the top power in Gaza as this war continues again to recede into memory.
Bill Rajo and I are speaking with our colleague David Daoud of the Foundation for Defense of Democracy about Gaza. But the region is overrun with battlefronts, and we need to go to Lebanon. What are they watching? What does it mean to Hezbollah, the huge army that's unconquered, last time I checked? But there's also Syria, but there's also Yemen.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.